Hello and welcome to another episode of Untangling. I truly hope you enjoyed last week's episode. We're heading into Labor Day and the family and I are ecstatic. We're heading to West Virginia to go see family. Part of this trip is going to be unique because we did get a new puppy. I talked about her a little bit on last week's episode, but her name is Beyonce. She is half poodle, half Shih Tzu. So I told my daughter's seven, I said, so she is a shit poo or a poo shit. My wife did not find that funny at all, but I'm factually speaking. So it is what it is. But we're excited. It will be the first time that we've taken a puppy on the plane. As the audience knows, I have another dog who basically gets sick when they travel. So all our adventures have been by car. So we had to basically go on Amazon and get a carry-on that fits under the seat. There's a whole process to the thing. And we're going to be flying Southwest. So we have to go on their website to see what do you need. Immunization, all the other veterinary stuff that comes with owning a puppy. And Southwest's like, nope, just bring your dog. It's going to be $125 when you get there. As long as it could fit under the seat. Don't cause any ruckus at the airport. Because, you know, they could basically last minute say, this dog's a little bit too wild and can't fly. So we'll wait and see. That'll be an interesting episode when I tell you how everything went at the airport. But for this week's episode, we're just going to basically, there's a lot happening. We're heading into Labor Day weekend, which again, ecstatic about. But I was actually watching a YouTube video of Damon John. And Damon John is actually of FUBU fame. He basically took a company from his garage, and now it's worth hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions. And I know FUBU, in regards to style, kind of just, they come and go when you're talking about fashion. But Damon John on Shark Tank just continues to do very, very well for himself. But what Damon John said was very interesting, and this was an interview on The Breakfast Club, which I don't watch. What I'll do is, on YouTube, if there's a short little story in regards to, you know, somebody popping up, you kind of click on it to see what's going on. But Damon John said, you know, in business, he has friends who tell him, when you go to work the first hour, do not check your email. Do not hop on social media. Because once you check your email, you're on the defensive. So he goes, I want you to think about that. But once you go on social media, there's somebody richer than you, somebody better looking than you, somebody with a better life than you, somebody with a bigger house than you. So there's no positives that could come from social media logging on when you're having a great morning just to say, you know what? At my age, I'm really not where I need to be. But that's not what stood out to me. What stood out to me is what he said about, you know, going to work and basically checking your emails. He said, first hour, do not do it. He said he has a very, very successful friend. And that successful friend, what they do is they're on the offensive. So they send emails the first hour in regards to what they need done. Because once you start reading your corporate emails or your personal emails, whatever email you're receiving, now you have to cater to everybody else's needs. You have to take a pause and say, when do I start taking care of myself? Because if you're in business, I'm pretty sure you have to get things done as well. So follow up on what needs to be done. So just one of those little untangling tidbits that I hope is able to help the audience. Reverse it. Go on the offensive. Start sending those out. What did you need accomplished that wasn't? Follow up. And just really, really great advice there. But the other thing I learned, and this is just me personally just observing, is one of my favorite phrases is basically a paid actor. So what's a paid actor? A paid actor is somebody who is at a campaign, at a rally, town hall, or shooting a TikTok, Instagram, a Facebook, a Snapchat video, and things just seem to be a little bit too perfect. It seems scripted. So we call them paid actors. Like somebody who, you know, you watch a game, but for whatever reason, they're saying, you know what? We know the quarterback threw 5 interceptions, but here's why this quarterback is great. Paid actor. You don't know their agenda. So with a paid actor, they're everywhere, okay? Whether it's through social media, whether it's at work, whether it's a video, let's just say, go somewhere where things just seem to be going a little bit too perfectly and somebody just seems to be saying the right thing, you know, I call them a paid actor. So again, one of my favorite phrases, a paid actor, move on. Where you see a lot of it is actually in journalism, paid actors. But another word I actually learned, and I like to share it with the untangling audience, is a plant. So what is a plant, you ask? A plant is somebody who basically comes from out of nowhere and is able to achieve this amount of fame that nobody in their industry knows who they are. The audience, the fans don't know who they are, but they come out of nowhere and they just have a brand, and it's a big brand. And you see a lot of this in podcasting, where somebody comes out of nowhere, or TikTok, or Instagram, they come out of nowhere and they have this a massive following of, let's just say, 5 million people. And all their stuff just seems to be a little bit perfect. So a lot of plants, they're fueled by the big corporations. Because the big corporations, they've had to adapt. They have to understand, hey, you know, with this audience, nobody wants to watch a dolphin flipper, okay? They'll churn that thing so fast, it's not funny. Nobody wants to watch chairs where people hang out at a bar and drink. They had to adapt with society and the times. So how can we get their attention? Another example of a plant is a singer who all of a sudden has all this fame and fortune out of the blue. It takes a lot to make it as a musician. And I remember Lionel Richie explaining his story, what he had to go through playing at Subways, not knowing where his next meal was coming from, taking any gig he could get. This is Lionel Richie. And now all of a sudden, you know, he was talking about this in reference to American Idol based on some of the platform these people have. But case in point, American Idol, people just fall out of the sky and they have all these followers. So they are an industry plant where the industry will strategize on how can we make this person famous. And how do we keep them famous? And again, it's out of the blue. They start booking interviews and you're like, wow, maybe I should need to know about this person. The knock about plants is a lot of times you don't know their background. Case in point, Jared from Subway. He's an industry plant, okay? A guy who basically lost 300 pounds eating Subway subs. Give me a break, okay, people? And people actually believe that. They go, yeah, he ate on Subway subs. That's how I was able to lose weight. Sure. There's a lot of people eating Subway subs. Trust me. I don't mean to be funny. They don't look like Jared or lost the weight Jared did. But, you know, Jared's in a predicament because he actually ended up being a pedophile. So that kind of backfired on Subway. But those are the, you know, two phrases. A paid actor. A plant. Those are big because they are extremely profitable. So you might be looking at your life. Why can't I amass 5 million followers? Why can't I, you know, become the next big hit on YouTube? You see a lot of this. I don't know if you've been following the news, but a lot of conservative singers who came from nowhere all of a sudden have 500 million views based on, you know, this small town. There's another guy talking about how hard he works 40 hours a week and the system's against him. What's fascinating is they always talk about how people are against them, how Black Lives Matter is against them. But you'll notice in all their music, all their point of views, they always leave the corporations out. It's always working hard, going back home, how tough the small town is, you know, the potholes in the road, personal issues. They always leave out politicians, corporations, which I find so fascinating. We'll shift over to football. So with the 49ers, they traded their franchise quarterback, Trey Lance, to the Cowboys for, I want to say it was a fourth round pick. And this story is an absolute mess, to say the least. So for all of you who don't know, long story short, still relevant, Brock Purdy got a chance to come in and play after Trey Lance got hurt. He just took advantage of the moment. So no knock on Brock Purdy of Iowa State fame. But with Trey Lance, the 49ers, they moved mountains in order to be able to draft him. And they decided that Purdy is the face of that franchise so that they would basically trade him away to Dallas. Where the story gets interesting is a lot of times you should not lose your position to an injury. And Trey Lance did. He has a total of 8 games played, not including some of the preseasons. And the 49ers felt like they have seen enough and it was simply time to move on. Here's my take on the situation. I think Kyle Shanahan, has a track record. This is the same man who drove RG3's career into the ground when he was in Washington because he favored Kirk Cousins, which is not an issue. This is a man who basically lost to the Patriots after Atlanta was up with Matt Ryan 28-3 in a Super Bowl. This is a man who took Schaub and made him look like a decent quarterback. They were on the Texans, or I think Schaub actually got traded to Atlanta, whatever the situation. So he basically became what is known as a quarterback guru. But I personally believe San Francisco is a disorganized and a chaotic, a awful organization. And I also feel that with Kyle Shanahan's ego, and you have to know who his father is. His father is Mike Shanahan, who won the Super Bowl with the Denver Broncos. Nobody is bigger than my system. And I know they wanted to quiet down the noise in regards to answering questions about Trey Lance, who's the starter. And he just kept getting sick of it and sick of it and sick of it. And basically, they blamed it on Trey Lance not progressing. It's one thing, and you can always tie this to business. It's one thing if a business fires you. It's another when they destroy your character on the way out. And that is what they did to Trey Lance. Now, Jerry Jones, I think he made a very, very smart move because what you want to do with a quarterback like Dak Prescott that you're paying a lot of money to is simply, hey, you got to step it up. Your backup might be a starter because if you have a bad season, not only is Mike McCarthy not going to be here, we're not going to pay you $70 million a year to play this position as well. So I actually look for the Cowboys to actually have a really, really good year. Amazing defense, great offense. I do think they lose a little with Zeke because Zeke is literally one of the best blocking running backs I've ever seen in my life. And I know a lot of times with running backs, you feel like, you know, they have to run for 2,000 yards, you know, 10 touchdowns to be relevant. But when Zeke was on that field, he never or rarely ever missed an assignment. So San Francisco, they are in a mess. They are a Brock Purdy injury away from a complete disaster because the backup is Sam Darnold, who Shanahan feels like, hey, this might be my new Schwab because he likes to develop people. He likes to take the credit. Look, I made somebody great that 9 other organizations before me could not. So talking about the NFL, that's one of the biggest news. And I truly believe that the 49ers, if I had to make a guess on a team who had a great season last year but won't make the playoffs, because you always have to have one of those teams. You know, last year it was the LA Rams. They won a Super Bowl, then won 4 games. If I had to make a guess on who won't be making the playoffs, I would definitely be leaning towards the 49ers because Lynch, Kyle Shanahan, I think both of their egos are way too big for the Bay Area. But don't worry, they'll keep getting opportunity after opportunity after opportunity, even though the 49ers do in fact have an all-star team. Yeah, so untangling audience, I'm telling you right now that Generation Alpha is going to be the real deal, okay? So Generation Alpha is my daughter's generation. She was born in 2015. And the term Generation Alpha refers to a group of individuals born between 2013 and 2025. This is the generation after Gen Z. And here is why they are on another level. So I was talking to my daughter in regards to how her first couple of weeks of school were going. And she's told me, she goes, you know, you're not going to believe this story. So the teacher, they have tablets. And so the teacher gives them their tablets and she goes, hey, you know, this is only for schoolwork. It's math time. Please do your math. My daughter's 7 years old. She is on the younger side because her birthday is in September. I think that's how that works. Who knows? But anyways, so, you know, you could only do math with your tablet. So the teacher basically goes to her desk and they work in little groups. And she tells me that basically her counterpart, who we will leave his name out of it, was able to hack into PBS and play all their games. So we're sitting there at dinner, myself, my wife, and my daughter, and she tells us a story. My wife and I, we pause, we look at each other. We said, did you say hacked into a system? She goes, yeah, he's so good with computers. He was able to figure out how to get out of the math program that the teacher had us all go into. He went into PBS and it was asking for a passcode and he figured it out. And then he just showed us he was playing PBS games, you know, while we were supposed to be doing the assignment. And my wife and I, we didn't want to laugh, but I looked at my daughter, and I said, listen, this kid, he might be, in his future, he will be working for the FBI in cybersecurity. And it's pretty interesting because my wife actually got a chance to meet the culprit, we'll call him. She said, for those of you who don't know, my wife is a professor in early child education and development. If you hear any background noise, that might actually be Beyonce grunting, doing God knows what back there. But she actually looks like a little Ewok. But my wife does early child education and development, and she is a professor. And she said, you know, the minute I met, we'll call him the culprit, she was the first thing I picked up about him was how fast of a thinker he was. You know, she would ask him a question, and he had a response. And so that was pretty interesting to another way of kind of saying, okay, this is a pretty smart kid. But watch out for Generation Alpha. Speaking of back to school, what an amazing feeling when you're able to get your little one or little ones out of that door to embark on their journey of becoming an adult. But another conversation, you know, I had with my daughter is that her and her mother, they always do learning on a Saturday. And one of the assignments was simply to learn a little bit more about pigs. And I didn't know this, but the reason why pigs roll in mud. Do you know that answer? My whole life, I did not know this answer. So it turns out after my daughter did her research, she wanted to share the exciting news with me. And the reason why pigs roll in mud is because they have such sensitive skin that they use the mud as a form of sunscreen. So that's why they're always rolling around in the mud, because it will add as an additional layer to protect them from the sun. And I'm sitting there, I'm thinking about this, and I'm like, that's pretty interesting. I never knew to think about why do pigs roll in mud. Another reason why pigs roll in mud, that some of you might know, is that it obviously helps regulate their body temperature. So they feel like they're getting a little bit overheated. They will find a mud pile, just roll around in it. Whether that mud pile has shit in it or not, they really don't care. And that's where the saying, a pig in shit, comes from. Well, how happy are you? Oh, I'm happier than a pig in shit. But just fascinating information. There's so many things that we deal with on a daily basis that we don't even think of. And I find that fascinating that my 7-year-old, a lot of times people say, oh, you know, you can't be, a kid could never be smarter than their parents. And I remember talking about this in Dad's Uplifting Dads when I used to attend. I go, I don't believe that. I think sometimes there are kids who are way more brilliant than their parents. I think as a parent, it's probably a little bit embarrassing. Oh my goodness, my kid's actually smarter than me. Yeah, that's a tough thing. That's a tough pill to swallow, but that's just my 2 cents. Another interesting conversation I had today was with my brother, and it was along the line of just sports, right? More of youth sports. And some of the terminologies, and one of the things with my brother, he's very observant. He said something that really stood out to me. You know, he was at a event, and a lot of times, you know, you have politics when it comes to sports, corporation. It is what it is. But anyways, and this is just not his perspective. It's like, you know, travel ball, being out of the state, just observing. My nephew, he plays soccer, which he's really good at, baseball, which he's really good at. Got a chance to kind of see him display a little bit of his talents when we were hanging out last time I was in Boston. And, you know, just an athlete, but just like, you know, you hear the word God-given talent. There's another side to that, right? And that other side to that is, do you know how to use that God-given talent? And he's my nephew seems to be putting it together. Real, real smart kid. So he'll be fine. But one of the things is, if you ever go to a sporting event, and down the street here, we have youth football. You know, when the games start, and I just remember thinking back when I was in high school, going to high school football games, so on and so forth. You'll hear the parents sometimes say, oh, he doesn't belong out there. And I never thought anything of it. And, you know, when I was talking to my brother, I go, whoa, wait a minute. The way you just said that, it was my aha moment. He doesn't belong out there. So what they're really saying is that this player does not belong out there with the rest of the kids. And what makes them know that? I mean, these parents, you're not a talent scout. You have scouts who get paid millions and millions of dollars who actually whiffed on a quarterback, you know, we'll call him Trey Lance, for a very wealthy organization. We'll call them the 49ers. And you're telling me you know who belongs out there or doesn't? And the way my brother said it, he didn't say anything in regards to, hey, here's what I meant by it. But it was just that aha moment where it simply, he doesn't belong out there with the rest of them. Because in sports, especially youth sports, there is politics. And those politics are blatant. And I said, you know what? It's so funny you just said that, because I never looked at it from the political perspective. I've always looked at it from the perspective of he or she does not belong out there because they're not ready. But then I thought about it. Who are these parents to decide who's ready and not ready? I mean, the coach is putting this person in there and you're questioning the coach's judgment. And I'll never hear that phrase, oh, he doesn't belong in there, she doesn't belong in there, the same ever again. Again, just a aha moment. I don't know how the untangling audience kind of looks at that terminology, but there is a little bit of a dog whistle to it as well. If you want to break down race, there is a little bit of socioeconomic aspect to it as well. If you want to talk about rich versus poor, he or she doesn't belong out there. They're not one of us. They'll never be one of us. I don't know if I shared this story with the untangling audience, but my daughter does tennis. And she has a tennis coach. And the way I describe the tennis coach to my wife is more of a, this person reminds me a lot of Phil Knight, okay? Older, I would say, you know, 65 plus, and I'm being very, very generous, pushes the players, calls people out. So I went to one of my daughter's practices, and the coach said, who I call Bobby Knight, hey, do you mind picking up the ball? All the kids start picking up the ball. And then you see this housewife who looks like they belong in, the Beverly Hills Housewives, the Jersey Housewives, with the boots, the whole outfit. You know them. You could spot them from a mile away. And she tells her son, I asked you to pick up the balls. And I'm not kidding you. I'm observing this in real life. The mother stands up and says, don't you think there's a nicer way you could talk to him? And I look at this in disbelief. This parent questioning the coach who's teaching these young 6, 7, 8-year-olds discipline. She got so upset that the coach talked to her king, who's her son, this way, that she was beside herself. And I'm sitting there and I'm just like, no wonder why all these kids growing up are softer than puppy shit. Look at who the parents are. Any obstacle, the parents, you know, it just has you thinking, because a great rapper is Kendrick Lamar. In his latest album, he says a very, very powerful line. He says, point the finger, they'll promote you. And that's who some of these people are. You know, they're the hallway pass people. They're the point the finger people. They're the, oh, it's everybody else's kid, can't be my kid people. And it's just fascinating to observe these people in a sports setting. Like, why would you sign your son up to play tennis, to learn the game, and then question the coach who does something as simply as, hey, can everybody pick up the ball? It'd be one thing if the coach said, hey, I want you to pick up the ball, and everybody lets watch him and laugh. Yeah, then I think you have a legitimate argument there. But it's just really fascinating. So next time, the Untangling audience, you go to a sporting event, you go to a youth sporting event, whatever the event is, pay close attention. Listen to the terminology that people use. And you might be in my predicament where you heard they don't belong out there. And you just think they're just trying to, they're saying something positive. Yeah, I don't know if he or she does belong out there. You start saying it. So don't get caught up in that trap. We have a lot of people who have a lot of hatred in their hearts. It doesn't exempt them from youth sports or whatever sport. But again, just simply pay attention at your next outing. Yeah, so on another note, last night I was bored. TV's basically unwatchable, to say the least. And I'm flipping through. And when I say flipping through, it's really interesting because now everything's streaming. So you have Prime, you have HBO Max or Max. You know, by the way, that is the worst brand strategy decision ever. HBO, to me, is like Mercedes-Benz. And to get rid of that name for Max that nobody knows literally should be a crime. What that tells me is you have a CEO who has an ego so big, I'll rename the thing and we're going to be bigger than HBO. And I know it's a bad decision because when you go to Max, it says, HBO in lower letters right below it. So that way, you know, hey, this is where Sopranos, The Wire, and every other, The Affair, every great show ever written is basically on. But anyways, that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is I'm flipping through the streaming apps and I'm like, oh, you know, what's there to watch? In Prime, you know, they recommend a few movies and I'm just like, okay, Till. Emmett Till, and I go, man, you know, that's actually kind of dark. I don't really want to watch that. But, you know, it was in the movies. It's available free now. I go, okay, I'll watch the first 10 minutes of it. So I start watching the first 10 minutes of it, and, you know, it's just what it is. It's kind of like, you know, bright. You have the actors, people kind of overacting to make sure they get a nomination. I didn't really sense any chemistry from any of the characters. Kind of like, okay, we're just going to tell you a story. And trust me when I tell you, I did not finish more than 15 minutes of this movie. And part of it is because, you know, they kind of get to the point really, really quick. So I'll just fast forward. So Emmett ends up leaving Chicago to go to Mississippi to go see relatives. And, you know, they're in a cotton field because, you know, they're picking cotton. And this boy from Chicago, all this is so foreign to him. You know, why are black people picking cotton? And he's just having a good time. You know, fast forward, he goes into the store where the incident happens. So he basically says to the lady, hey, you look like you could be a Hollywood movie star. And she looks at him like, how dare you talk to a white woman that way? He just like, you know, kind of says, okay. And then he whistles and that really sets her off. She goes to her car. They all take off. Oh my goodness, she's going to shoot us. She's going to shoot us. And so she points a gun at him and they take off. What I didn't know about the story is I thought everything unfolded pretty fast. But it turns out 4 or 5 days went by. And this lady, I want to see her in real life. Her name's Carol. I forget her last name. And honestly, who cares? You want to talk about a demon. That's a whole nother conversation. But so she lets it fester, tells her husband. And they basically go to, you know, get Emmett Till from his grandfather's house in Mississippi. And they storm in, they take him. And so the movie makes sure that they have black people helping out in getting Emmett Till, which I kind of find hard to believe. But who knows, okay? Who knows? And the other thing is, I go, you know what? I'm going to stop right here. I got to see what TikTok's saying about this. So I put Till in the search field in TikTok. And people are outraged. They go, hey, the whistling never happened. This movie's complete garbage. And I go, okay, so I'm not crazy. So I go back and I'm watching it. And they show the white lady who said Emmett Till whistled at her and was disrespectful. And they're bringing him into the truck and he's fighting for his life. And they have her kind of sobbing in the back seat with a little bit of empathy. And they said, which one of those, you know, N-words was it? Is it him? And she goes, yeah. Like tears coming out, like she didn't want to be part of it. And I stopped it right there. I go, this is complete bullshit. Okay. A, I guarantee when that incident happened, that lady was the first person out of that car or that truck saying it was him right there. It was that N-word. That's a true story. But Hollywood, they kind of have to sugarcoat it to kind of protect the image of how, you know, with white women back in those days, everything is good. So it's just Hollywood is such a bizarre place. They are getting their lunch handed to them by Netflix because Netflix said, you know what? We'll provide the platform and let you tell the story how you see it. Okay. That's why 3 billion people watch Squid Games. That's why 2 billion people watch whatever that movie was about Sandra Bullock, the Bird Box, whatever it was called. That's why people are watching, you know, the Stephon Marbury documentary. They're watching the Florida Gators, Johnny Manziel, because on Narcos, we're going to let you tell the story and we're going to fund it. Whereas Hollywood, they always have a weird agenda like, hey, remember the Titans? You know, black people and white people, we can come together in Virginia and win a championship. There's always this sugarcoating. And then if you go to Netflix, and one of my favorite documentaries of all time is What Happened to Nina Simone. She tells you about the song Strange Fruit, which are basically black people hanging from trees. What she went through to become a singer in Mississippi. And another amazing documentary, if you haven't seen it, it's on HBO, is Sidney Poitier. Highly recommend it. His story, the fact that that's not a Hollywood movie is so concerning. I won't bore you with the detail. Sidney Poitier, a black man from Cat Island in the Bahamas, leaves and becomes a Hollywood legend. Top 3 greatest actors who ever lived, hands down. And I know I have an audience. Oh, no. And again, a lot of times people, they don't have the background in communications, movies. They just, you know, they'll just throw anything out there. But hands down, top three greatest actors of all time, not up for debate. I would say him. I would say it's Poirier and Marlon Brando. Okay, other two, and then you know you could argue about the last person who belongs on that list. But he has a blockbuster documentary on Max. Notice I said HBO. Sorry, Max. And it's just really interesting. So if you're going to go see Till, do not waste your time. It is a bunch of bullshit. I mean, it's one of those things where if it ends up being a good movie, that would be the greatest movie turnaround in the history of movies. I wasn't buying it for a second. They try to paint a pretty picture of you got to understand the times. No, you don't have to understand the times to understand an adult wanted a 8-year-old kid or what, 8 to 13-year-old kid dead because of a incident that never happened. And it never happened because she went on to publish a book and told everybody it didn't happen. But you know what, America, they don't care. It's simply anything you got to do to get clicks, to get likes, to move your podcast. But luckily, I'm not a plant. I'm not a paid actor. I'm grinding. Don't advertise. So if you're listening, hope you enjoyed this episode. Catch you on the rebound.
Ce que veut dire zoubizou, ça veut dire je.